Hello, and welcome to episode 84 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We are here today with Steve Wilbur, concert pianist and teacher at Lee University. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Jordan. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on the show. So the first question I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Public interest. I don't know if it's, I would consider it public interest, but public good or the well-being of the public, because it's sort of like a commodity. You know, you could be a regular person and never drive a motorboat, but if you have extra money and you have extra time and you really want to do it for fun, you could go buy a motorboat. Most average people can't. Just like you can live in the normal world and never ever hear a classical piano concert or probably be a totally normal and good person and happy. But if you think about the average person today, you know, the busy world, 9-to-5 working and more, most people just have a lot of drudgery, mundane tasks, which they do perfunctorily daily, and they go about their business, go home, watch TV, have a beer, and go to bed. Well, I play classical piano, and that's not something that's necessary, but it's certainly, I think, something that helps people. It gives them more imagination. It gives them peace and quiet and relaxation and vigor and different things like that. So if you can go to a concert, which I do, sometimes they're free and sometimes they're charged, it helps people. So I don't know if it's public interest, but it's helping the public good, I guess, or the psyche of people.
So what is the primary purpose when you play the piano? Why do you play the piano?
Why do I play the piano? Well, I play the piano because a specific event when I was 15 happened to be in Europe for 4 months when I was in high school, traveling, staying with a family my parents had met. And I was in southern France at the time, in Gap. And I just, somebody played a recording of somebody playing Beethoven, and I instantly just loved it and thought, I have to be a pianist. It moved me so much, I knew that instant I would be a classical pianist. Now, I had been playing the piano for about 2.5 years, badly and not well and not practicing. I didn't care one bit about it. But just that one moment changed my life. Now, the reason I play now is because music is very moving, and it is me. I am a musician at heart. And people that hear good music, when they hear it, oftentimes say, wow, I can't believe it. That's changed my life, or that's very moving to me. So it moves me to be able to play music and move people.
Do you seek to create an experience for others that is similar to the experience that you had with Beethoven in southern France?
Well, when I walk out to play, I don't think, okay, I'm going to make these people think this. I'm just thinking, I want to play the best I can play. For me and for everybody. I'm not happy if I play, here's the thing, if I play that I think I played really badly and everybody else is happy, I should be happy, but I'm not. Now, if I play really great and I'm happy and they're not happy, I'm not. So there's a combination here. I have to play well and be happy myself, but I also want the other people to be happy. I can't just play in a vacuum. Like some people can go up on stage and they play like they're in a box, just like they're in the practice room. It's the same if they're in the living room, it's the same in the hall. Concert stage. For me, I'm not playing anything on a stage like I'm home. I feel much more interactive with the people. So yes, I want them to have a moving experience, a life-changing experience, or to really enjoy their moments. But when I'm playing, I'm not thinking that. I'm worried about playing well. So I have to worry about me, but I have to hope that and trust that if I'm worrying about me and the music, that it will in turn transfer into moving the people.
What is the role of the audience in forming the music as you play it in a hall?
Well, the role of the audience is everything, because without them, I'm not playing. If I just wanted to sit home and play the band, I'd probably quit. Well, I wouldn't practice to memorize the music so well or to have it so polished. I would just play it halfway. I don't have much purpose in playing it for myself. So without the audience, I wouldn't practice so hard and work so hard to make the music part of me. Because it's just not notes. It's like a living, breathing thing that comes alive when I play it or somebody else plays it. So the audience, they're there to be entertained. And that sounds like a kind of superficial word. I don't like the word entertained, because I think that this art, this classical music, is so powerful and so deep. It's really life-altering or moment-altering. But the hour that you're there, it should be altering. And that you should walk out of there thinking, wow, I'm different for a certain amount of time for this reason. So the audience is everything, because they're the people that are supposed to be pleased and entertained, if you will. But
are they to be entertained or to be emotionally moved?
More emotionally moved. Entertained is like watching like a circus or something. It's just you watch it and then you walk away. Entertained to me doesn't mean that your mood and your psyche and your life has changed in any way. Entertained is more of a superficial way. For me, the music moves you and changes you, and it can complete. I played one somewhere, and a girl walked up to me and said, "It changed my life." Now, I really wanted to laugh. Like, I mean, how does this change your life? But, you know, emotions are weird, and there's all kinds of emotions that come from different things. And without emotions, it's hard to change your life, you know. And to me, music is emotion. So, in a way, she has every right to say that. But I don't put so much, you know, importance on myself to say I could change someone's life. But if it does, it does.
I want to go pursue the emotion for a moment, Brooke. But before we do, I'd like to talk, just clarify for a moment what you had said. You said basically that if you had never had an audience and you were just going to play in your room by yourself, that you wouldn't have worked as hard, you wouldn't have practiced as much, you wouldn't have polished it to perfection, and wouldn't have taken pleasure, and might have even quit. So does that lead us to believe that the real pleasure and fulfillment and meaning in music isn't merely the creation of music, but is the giving of that living entity that you call music to the audience, that really providing this pleasure, this meaning, this fulfillment, this emotional catalyst for others, that gifting is what is so rewarding for you? Does that strike home?
Yes. I mean, I'm sure that's the way with a lot of things. I can't think of perfect examples. Just about so many things we do in life are pretty meaningless just at home, you know. Like, for example, athletes, they go to the gym and lift weights, get strong and fast, but say you're not playing a sport. Okay, you can lift weights to look big and strong, but just say that you're the best jumper in the world. What good is that if you're just at home doing it, if you can't apply it? That might be a kind of cheesy example. But with music, absolutely. I mean, music is the only art form that I can think of that in its own, before you even hear it, is not really anything. It's just notes on a page. Like, a statue is a statue always. A painting is always a painting. A book is always a book. You can read the words in your mind. But music, the notes on the page are nothing until you realize them into actual existence of sound. So, yes, I can practice at home and entertain myself, and yes, I get enjoyment, and they say that virtuoso is his own reward. Yeah, that's fine, but it's not really. You're right.
So I have a question. Just when you talk about notes on a page, what's the difference between notes on a page written by a great composer or a great author, with Beethoven is someone you mentioned, and words on the page written by a great author, say Shakespeare? You say that there's very little value on the notes on the page, and the real value comes in not only being played, because you said that just playing it itself isn't enough, but giving it. So Shakespeare is a theater, so what value is there to having Shakespeare on the page versus it being performed, and then also literature not meant to be performed? Like,
well, that's
Faulkner.
Different. You kind of conflated two different ideas. A regular book like The Chronicles of Narnia or The Lord of the Rings, you read the book, the words are there, okay? But if you're reading a play and you have to act it out, that's different. That's a different type of art, okay? Mm-hmm. So I think we should differentiate between that, and I'm sure people could argue with me about it. But a book, you know, the man went to the store. You know, no matter what accent or what kind of language you say that with what sort of inflections, the man went to the store, you know. But if you take the first, you know, three measures of a Beethoven sonata, like a Appassionata, 50 different people are going to play it. It's all going to be different. Yes, it has the same pitch value. But in music, the way you inflect it and the nuances make it sound different. And there's a lot of personality involved. That's also true with acting and, you know, different paintings by different people. But music, you have to realize the notes and hear them before it actually means anything. Books, you can look at it, and I think it always means what it means. Mm-hmm. You know, now acting those words out, you could have a lot of variety there. So that could be, you know, equated with something similar to music.
Can you ever, as a musician, can you ever look at notes on a page and actually hear the music?
Yeah. I mean, it depends how complicated it is. Some people can look at a whole bunch of notes and hear everything, and some hear just a simple tune. I don't know where I fall on that, but most of the time, something I'm playing, I've already heard. So when I look at the page, my mind, like, if you tell me it's Merry Christmas, the song, Wish You a Merry Christmas, as soon as I know that's the melody, I can hear it because I've heard the song, right? But if it's something I've never heard before and you show me the page, yes, I could hear different elements and different parts of it, but to hold it all together, maybe not perfectly, but a lot of it I could hear, yes.
So to return to emotions, you said that there was a girl who came up to you who said that her life was changed, and you had said that you yourself...
Well, one second. Actually, she didn't tell me that. She told somebody else who told me.
Okay, so some girl's life was changed by your playing, and your life was changed by music that was written by both Beethoven. And
right.
You said there's some kind of emotional component that's brought out by music. Could you talk a little bit more about what kind of emotion music in general can bring, what emotions can be elicited from classical music or from various types of classical music? What is the role of music in eliciting emotions from the audience?
Well, I mean, I don't like to venture into talking about other forms of music, even though I know about them, you know, rock and roll and pop and jazz. They all bring emotions in different ways, but specifically classical music, because that's what I play and that's what I study and teach and so on. There's so many types of emotions. I mean, if you study the Renaissance era, which was a rebirth of the Greek ideals of emotion, somebody painted different pictures of all the possible emotions a face could make. So you see 20 or 30 different faces with a grimace or a smile or a frown. And the whole idea is that these are different emotions that are created when we hear a certain type of music. So all music creates some sort of emotion. It doesn't matter what it is. Classical has the whole rainbow of possibilities. And, you know, when I play it, my goal is to just basically take what the composer's intent was and magnify it. Now, that could be heresy. Some people think you got to play exactly what the composer wanted, no more, no less, and that's it. Well, I don't believe that. I think we take what the composer did, and it becomes part ours. Like Steven Wilbur will potentially be playing Beethoven, but that Beethoven will also be Steven Wilbur's feeling of it, whereas John Smith down the street will have his own feeling of it. Nobody can play something perfectly objectively. Otherwise, we would just put it into a computer and spit it out, and we don't care, you know? And this music is very vibrant, very alive. It's hard to describe in words because, after all, it's music. And it's really awful to have to describe something that we're doing that's not in words. You know, everything else can be described in words. But music is different. And having to describe music in words is unfair to the music. So you have to experience it to really be able to understand. But if you went there and listened to a Beethoven symphony, most people would walk away feeling something very strongly. So our goal as performers is to hear the music, internalize it, and bake it in our, you know, psychic oven. I say the music takes time to season inside of us. We just learn the notes at first, but over the course of days and weeks, it gestates and it becomes kind of like a baby growing in a womb. It gets more alive and part of you. And then when you dispel it on stage, people can really sense your feeling and your emotion. Whereas if you just got up there and pounded out notes with any feeling, people can feel the difference. And so music is very alive. It's very active.
Interesting. You mentioned the absence of words or music, yet isn't Beethoven's Ninth Symphony set to music in the Ode to Joy poem by Schiller?
Yeah, so of course, lots of classical music, tons, you know, operas and songs for singers. They have notes sing words too. So the words are sung to the music, and that's different. But still, the words are talking about, you know, love and life and death and happiness, just like real life events. But still, to describe in adjectives what we're hearing is different than saying that there's words given to music. So if you go to see an opera, and most operas talk about, you know, death and life and love and all that, yeah, you can understand what they're saying, but still it gives you an emotion. But it's hard to describe in really proper words, English or any language, it's really hard to describe your feelings when they're that powerful. It's just, sometimes it's so overwhelming, you're just like speechless, you know?
So that's what I mean. When you perform, do you already have in your head, say, a message of emotions that you wish to convey to the audience, or do you merely, you said you try to play as best as you can. Do you play, do emotions bubble up as you play and they get transmitted from the music through you to the audience, or are you trying to convey a particular emotion to the audience? What are you trying to accomplish, and how do emotions that you emote end up being transmitted to the audience?
It's part of both. Partly, as a performer, our goal is to have integrity and play what the composer wanted. Like, obviously, if I'm playing a real serious Beethoven slow movement of a piano sonata, his sonata slow movements are very serious sometimes. But I go up there willy-nilly and say, I'm going to make this a joke. Okay, that has no integrity, and that's kind of lying to the world. But if I go up there with the intention of playing the music itself already has a certain underlying current of feeling. Whether I like it or not, it's life. So I don't have to really try too hard, but some people have an extra charismatic gift to connect to the music. And those are the performers that in all walks of life, whether it's, you know, politicians that speak well with their great charisma or performers that are singing pop music or classical music, these people that have that extra connection, or I don't know what you call it, charisma, they can convey that feeling much more strongly than a person that's not gifted at all. You see what I'm saying? So when I'm going out there, I'm thinking, obviously, I know what the music feels like, the general tone or timbre of the underlying feeling. And I don't have to try too hard. Some people don't. For me, it's more natural, but sometimes you have feelings. It comes out really strongly. And you have to be careful because you become overwhelmed with the feeling and you forget what you're doing and you mess up.
As a performer, become overwhelmed by the emotions of the music?
Yeah, you can't let that really happen. I mean, it's easy if you let yourself.
Do you ever let yourself in practice do that just to experience the emotion?
Yeah. We have to practice performing in our practice like we will on stage, but no matter how much you try,
I mean, for your own pleasure when you're without an audience, and if you were to screw up, it wouldn't matter to anyone. Do you ever allow yourself to have emotion overtake you and thus disrupt your performance?
Yeah, once in a while. I just like to let go. You can't practice always and be like a robot and then get on the stage and expect to be an emotional hero, and you want to fall apart if you haven't experienced it somehow before. Now, some great pianists, they're very good at just, you know, keeping themselves distant and not getting too involved. And I believe that sometimes that they come across as cool, which I don't like. I want a performer to be involved and care. And if you have to be so distant from the music for whatever reason, I can tell. Some people can tell. But I do let myself in practice go crazy sometimes just to feel it, you know, get used to the idea of what it's going to be like.
So you continue to perform, and yet you also teach.
Yeah.
Why is it that you teach, and what is it that you get out of teaching? Why not be a full-time concert pianist?
Well, a lot of people can't perform enough to live. You know, they have to do other things. But teaching has its own rewards, which are different, you know. In this case, I like talking about music. I like dissecting a musical phrase. I like talking about where the important parts are, the high parts, you know, how to play this the best. That's fun to discuss. And you just don't walk into the street and discuss that with any average Joe. So the next best thing is to tell other people that want to play how to do it or help guide them through, depends on what level they're at. But it's fun to talk about music to people that are learning it. And you're teaching yourself, in essence. You're saying, so every piece of music that comes in front of me, I have to help decide what's the best way for this piece to be played. And there's millions of things to think about. We're basically scientists, or we're like Sherlock Holmes of music. You know, all the notes and all the directions are up there. We just have to decipher everything, put it all together and think, what should we do? What should we tell the students? And
interesting. What is there left to interpret if all the notes are right there on the page?
I know. That's really comical. That the average person would think, well, the notes are there, just play it and you're done. once you play the milk, it's probably 25% of it or 10% of it. Then there's, it just because it tells you to get louder, you know, is it, when you're going from 0 to 10, are you going from 1 to 3 faster or from 3 to 9 faster? Or, you know, are you getting louder at that note or this note? Do you slow down a little bit before you get louder at that note? You know, do you speed up after you play that note or wait to that note to get slower? There's so many millions of little things to think about. And as a musician, we're constantly thinking and judging the increments, you know. And just speaking about getting louder or softer, I like to think of a mathematical graph, chart, like a mountain, like a parabola. You know, 0 is the softest and 10 is the loudest. And, you know, over the course of 6 or 8 measures, the composer's telling us to get softer or louder. We have to constantly judge and grade with our mathematical ear. Is that loudness going from 2.5 to 3, or is it 2.5 to 3 or 3.5? Or I jumped accidentally from 2.5 to 5. That's too much of a...
Is it really this mathematical?
I make it mathematical because it's easy for people to understand when you see a mental chart in front of your mind. I'm not thinking 5 and 6 and 7 of loudness. I'm using my ear. But I use numbers for other people to get a visual. You see what I mean?
And concretely, what this translates as is how quickly you press the right note at the right key on the keyboard at the right time and how hard you press it. Is that basically
right.
What you're saying?
Yeah. Speed is speed creates power. Like when you are hitting a baseball, the faster you swing the bat makes the ball go farther, the slower. It's not how hard you're pushing the bat into the ball, it's the speed of the swing. So my finger hits the key real slowly, the hammer goes up real slowly, and it buries it. It's the string, and it's very soft. I hit the string super fast, the hammer goes flying up really fast, and it's really loud. So there's all these gradations, hundreds of touches. Each finger has to make different ones, and it's, if you think about it overly deeply, it's like the millipede with 1,000 legs. If you ask him which leg moves first, he doesn't know. At some point, you have to think about it, but then when you're playing, you just have to let your hands play.
And really, so you almost kind of disconnect your intellect from your hands once you've done it enough. You have muscle memory?
Yes, but you're always listening. You know, you're in a performance, you're always listening to notes, and it becomes so second nature to you that a lot of things you're not thinking. Sometimes you have to think, oh, I have to remember this chord because the memory's tough here, or remember that. The loudness and the softness in the music should become part of you at this point. You're just thinking, what do you want to do?
When you have your students, what is it that you try to teach them to convey to their audience? What is the gift of music?
I'm trying to convey to them, first of all, in the teaching studio when we're having lessons, that music is alive and we just don't hammer out notes like a robot. That's the worst thing. No time are we playing 5 or 6 notes in a row at the same level. We're never playing a bunch of 5s in a row. We always are doing something to the notes to make it lively, to make it interesting, to make it, you know, meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is to, my job as a teacher, see, I see everything that you see, but just like Sherlock Holmes always says, it's right in front of your eyes. You know, I can see it all. And he's accustomed to thinking that way, you know, looking at a crime scene or looking at, you know, something in the dirt. So we're like that with music. We see everything everybody else sees. However, we're attuned and accustomed to noticing little things that a normal musician might not notice. And the more detail that you can pick up and the more detail you can put into your practice habits to make the music more perfect and interesting, the more the audience can pick up, I believe.
So now as we near the end of our podcast, I'd like to ask you to reflect for a moment about your years, your lifetime as a musician, your time spent performing in crowded concert halls, in teaching students in living rooms, in going to university and being an instructor and a teacher for students there, and thinking about why. Why is it that you've always been so attracted to music, and what is it that your music gives to the world? What, at the end of the day, would you like the world, how would you like the world to remember you, and to what extent does music play into that?
So, for me, why I do it is because I look at everything else in the world that I could do, and I think I could have done about anything if I really wanted to. In high school, at first, I thought I was going to be a professional soccer player or a lawyer, and I'm sure I could have done that, and I'm sure I would have liked it. But music is different, and you meet a lot of people that will say this, it changes your life. Once you can play music and think it and teach it and talk about it and experience it, you don't want to do anything else. Everything else seems boring or gray. It's almost like, you know, you look at color film, why would you want to go back to black and white? You know, it just, that's how the musical world is more alive. We're always dealing with nuances. Not that other people aren't, and I don't want to demean other people's jobs, because they all mean something to them, and they're all valid in their own way. You know, baling hay in the farm is just as valid as what I'm doing, but I prefer to do what I'm doing for my life for now. I did bale hay in high school. But so it's being around music makes you addicted to it. If you're good at it and you have a connection to it and you have the ability to do it and you're good at it, I think it's the reason you do it. You can't see yourself doing anything else. Like if you gave me $1 million and said, okay, you're done, don't work, don't teach, just go sit on an island, I wouldn't. I would always want to play the piano and teach and talk about it.
True.
So people that know me will probably have to realize, yes, I like to lift weights and be fit and play sports and watch the Steelers and, you know, talk about whatever, eat good food. But at the end of the day, you know, people always say what's the most important thing. You know, it's basically God, family, job. But as far as what to think about me and my job, yes. But I love music. I'm passionate about it, and I'm very emotional and sensitive about it.
Well, that has been Steve Wilbur, concert pianist and teacher at Lee University, who speaks about his relationship with music as a calling, as an active relationship with a living thing, as if almost with another person. Music for him is something that travels through Steve and is communicated emotionally and intellectually and undescribably to the audience. The fact that he is able to give to the world makes music that much more meaningful for him. That for Steve, to play music on his own is not as fulfilling as to be able to use music as a way of inspiring, even if for a moment, emotions in others. So that is advancing the public interest for Steve. It is allowing the world to indulge in their humanity, if only but for a moment. Steve, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jordan. I enjoyed myself.
And this has been episode 84 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We'll talk to you next time.